This meeting is being recorded.
Welcome to the podcast. I am here with Charlie Stevens. Charlie's got experience in life insurance and in pensions. We want to get into that and chat a little bit about how Bitcoin stands up to all this. And is Bitcoin the secret hedge, the secret weapon? We're going to get into that. Charlie, welcome, man. What's the crack?
Well, Denny, listen, thanks a million for letting me on. It's an absolute pleasure to be able to speak the mind and discuss a few things Bitcoin. I think it's always good to get that out as much as possible. So really appreciate it.
Deadly, man. Yeah, thanks for coming on. Let's just start at the beginning before we get into all the pensions and investment side of things. And I know we met in Bitcoin Amsterdam. We had an awesome weekend. What was your journey into Bitcoin?
It's an interesting one. I think a lot of people tend to journey in through the same reason. Maybe people have journeyed through different avenues, but it was through cryptocurrency originally. I remember I was in a third year in college. I was studying actuary and finance, which is based on insurance, and it's a lot of mathematics. But I had an interest in investments. I wasn't fully involved, but I was investing in a few stocks. And then one summer, my cousin calls me. Now, my cousin, he's a bit of a messer, right? He is a bit of a messer. And in the Leaving Cert, which is the Irish equivalent, he wouldn't have done that well. But he was really good at, like, hacking and doing all these kind of niche things. And he called me one day and he said, "Charlie, listen, these cryptocurrencies, right? I've just found a few of them and I've just made something like 20K or whatever." Now, at the time, that was ridiculous. I just piqued my interest. So we got involved or whatever, and I started looking it up, and I just grabbed my interest straight away. Obviously, for the money side of things, but then when you start digging up, you've got all these projects that are saying they're going to change the world, and that kind of entices you. So that was the initial input, and we started talking between friends, and the group was so active. Like, we just had a messaging group, and it was really active, and that really inspired me because there was a lot of back and forth. And I find that exchange of ideas between people and trying to build, I think that's what forms something powerful. So we actually ended up making an Instagram group, and then it ended up gaining a huge amount of followers, 100,000 followers. And we started wanting to monetize it. So we made another group, and I kind of stepped back at this time because it started getting serious and the guys were giving out TA tips and stuff like that. And it was getting a bit messy, but the boys went on, made a bit of money, and then it all ended up collapsing on top of each other. They all ended up being like from best friends to the worst of friends. But anyways, that's the story for another time. So that was my initial intro. And then I suppose Bitcoin in itself, it was actually discussing it with my mother. Now, I think my mum would be a bit more alternative than other people. And I think she's always been skeptical about the status quo and what the news gives out, and maybe what the government's narrative is at the time. So I think this piqued her interest as well. And she did research, and she mentioned that she was even more very much involved with Bitcoin. She thought it was paramount to focus on that. So I heeded her advice initially, and then I started looking into it. And since then, yeah, I just felt like Bitcoin was the one it was more authentic. People weren't screaming over the rooftops about Bitcoin. It was more subtle, you know, and there was a few figures that I respected that mentioned it, and then you start taking the layers out and the layers, and then you listen to certain people who really hit it at a deep level, like, let's say, Robert Breedlove, or even Michael Saylor from the physics standpoint, and then the macroeconomic side of things when you have Preston Pish and a lot of the people that he interviews, and you've got all these different perspectives from a philosophical point of view, but also from a financial point of view and other areas. And then you start realizing this is a multidimensional topic. You know, this is not just an investment or an asset class, but it is a very powerful asset class in itself if you want to box it in that way. Anyways,
yeah.
that's the intro.
Awesome. And like you say, yeah, Bitcoin goes into everything. It goes into politics, it goes into investing, it goes into money, it goes into human incentives, it goes into computer science. And that's sometimes a barrier to entry. And that's why I start to try and I remember in another business I had, I used to call things dinny science, because, you know, I'm not a serious intellect. I try and just break stuff down into a level you can absorb, or anyone can absorb. And then if you want to go deeper, you can. But the problem I find is if you're trying to go too deep in the beginning, you miss the foundations, you miss the basics. And without the basics, without the foundations in anything, you're doomed to failure. So that's why I was trying to start simple. And I suppose as you go through Bitcoin, all the layers, and you peel it all back, the conclusion I came to anyway was at its core, it's very simple. You know, when you peel everything back, it's very simple to understand, and it really is. It's just absolute scarcity, to put it in a handful of words, like, and humans by their nature search for scarcity. It's how we protect and store value over thousands of years, whether it be stocks or precious metals or building businesses or, you know, hoarding
cards,
Pokemon,
you know. Even as a kid, you have that intuitively, you have that search for what's scarce.
Totally. Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about your after college and your work then in pensions, in insurance, and how you started to relate that into Bitcoin, or how you started to think Bitcoin could be a part of this.
Yeah. So after graduating, I did an internship in PricewaterhouseCoopers as an actuarial consultant, and I was analysing all these large insurance companies that were headquartered in Dublin, in Ireland. And you saw these big balance sheets, and you saw that most of these insurance companies were invested like over 50-60% in bonds. And the main reason these guys were invested in bonds was because it's a regulatory requirement. So it all has to do with managing the risks of these insurance companies and making sure that they can pay out the claims in the future. And then at the same time, I was studying a lot about investments and about different asset types and why would you be invested in this or that. And I started to question why are they invested in all these bonds, and is this really the best route? So after college, then I went back to PricewaterhouseCoopers, and I was working with all these clients. But at the same time, I was trying to get the message across to the team that I was working with, to the partner at the firm, and I was trying to explain to them the basis of Bitcoin. So I suppose I was involved with all this risk management and all this investment. Well, I knew that there was this other asset type that I was interested in and was also performing so well. And I was just trying to ask myself, why aren't they in some way exposed to Bitcoin? Why wouldn't they be, even if it was 1% or even if it was 0.5%? And that really kind of pushed me. And I was like, well, I need to be able to communicate this. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of people out there thinking about this, but I really wanted to communicate to the institution that Bitcoin is a possibility and that this can be used for the institution. Now, since Pricewaterhouse, I went traveling. I was traveling around Australia, and I learned a lot of different things there. What pushes people, what incentivizes people, and I got to use Bitcoin quite a lot over there because it's a bit more like Wild West. And when I came back, then I started working for Standard Life, which is it's one of the major insurance companies in Ireland, and Phoenix Group, which is the parent company, manage over 200 billion, I think. So they're pretty big, but we deal with individuals. So these individuals would be from the ages of, you know, 20 up to death, and they plan on retiring. So the state pension has just gone up to 13.7 thousand euro per year for Ireland. Now, I just went down to the shop and I bought a pint of milk and a box of cereal, and it cost me around £6. So the state, it doesn't, like, if you do the maths, the state pension of 13.7k doesn't seem to really cover it for people. So people do need to take it on board and set up their own pension. So that's what Standard Life does.
Yeah, it's just over £250 a week. You're not gonna get too far in that. Like, it's
no,
every year £250 buys you less and less stuff. Like, what's electricity now? It's gone up 400% or something. That's why 3 years ago I was saying to people, old people have to sell their homes because they won't be able to afford to heat them. And lo and behold, it sickens me that we're living through it now. I get annoyed over that shit.
and for good reason, especially because you look around and you look around people and you see people suffering. And one thing is people not being able to reach to the end of the month or having to cut back. Fine, grand. It's good being disciplined. But people not understanding the basis of it. I think that's the real suffering. It's people kind of looking around in despair and being like, I'm doing everything right. I'm saving my money. I'm trying to get as cheap a rent as possible, which is nearly impossible. And they're still struggling. And I think that's why Bitcoin is such a beacon of hope, because it's the inverse of what's being told to you. It's that one thing that you can do with your money that isn't in the scope of the government. Because all these pensions that we set up for individuals, it's all regulated by the government. And at the end of the day, if the government doesn't agree with the investments, you're not going to end up investing in it. That's pretty much how it goes. So people, to be able to keep up with inflation now, they're required to risk their money. You know, if you look at bonds in general, especially over the last decade, they've been negative yields, which means that people were losing money if they were putting money into bonds. And now with inflation at close to 10% in EU or even bigger, you know, you're not getting higher than 3% yield. So you're losing 10% every single year when you're investing in a bond per se, let's say your average bond. So people need to be taking risks with the money that they've earned with their hard work in order to be able to eat the same amount of food next year than they're eating today. And I think that's criminal. I really think on the surface, it's like, okay, that's the way things are. But when you really start to dig down and you see who's benefiting from this and who's losing out, it's the people who are vulnerable who are the ones that are suffering. And the people who are benefiting are the ones who own all the assets and the ones who are closest to the printing press, which are those who own the biggest amounts of bonds and who take out the most debt, which are the nations themselves. So it's annoying.
Definitely. Yeah, so my thesis on a pension has always been they're overrated. And I'll just give you why I say that. And then you, with a bit of experience, can sort of challenge me on it or agree with me or break it down. But my thought on the pension always was they're overrated. It's teaching you that you're not clever enough to manage your own money. You should give it away to this man. The next thing that's terrible about it is you don't get access to your money until you're old. Over the last month, I've been at a couple of funerals of people who had only retired within 6 months and are now in the box. Okay. And that's why not being able to access that money until you're close to a time where a lot of people actually, that's when life expires for them. This is a really bad idea. Like, if I'm going to work for my money, I want access to it sooner. Like, not when I'm closer to the end of my life than at the prime of my life, I suppose. And not only does it just teach you that you're not smart enough, it's like, who's going to look after my money the best? I am. Who's incentivized for my money to do the best, to keep it the safest? I am. Okay. It's like, you know, you can find any analogy. You give someone a lend of something and they go and damage it, but they would treat their own. If it was theirs, they wouldn't. You know, if you have staff around and they wreck. I remember in the gyms, not with the staff, be buying a feckin' top of the range Hoover every 6 months. And I was like, if that was in the home, it would last 5 years. But just because it's not theirs, the thing is getting smashed and bashed. And that sort of, and you could call it like, maybe it's too extreme, but for me,
that's totally bang on. Sorry.
Yeah. And I just want to finish off and say, I'm not saying you shouldn't have a pension, but I'm saying you don't need to choose have it or don't have it. Have a pension, but also build your own. And that's what, you know, that's what I specialize in doing, is helping people to create their own little plan B pension, I call it. But that's why I think pensions are overrated. I hear horror stories about people who work their ass off all their life, and then it's not even worth them driving to the post office to collect the thing because it's so pitiful. And they just asked me, Dini, that thing was a racket. And I paid into it for 30 years. And I say, yeah, the only person retiring early off that pension is the pension manager, not you.
It's true. It's so how do you find the people responding then to the option of Bitcoin as another viable pension? How do you find the responses are when you're speaking to them?
Well, that's a whole other thing where, you know, a lot of these people are older because they're in their 60s or 70s that they've realized my pension, you know, where's all my money, basically. It's too late for them to do anything. So not to be ageist, but that demographic are going to struggle with Bitcoin a little bit more than someone in their 30s or 40s, because people a little bit younger have just lived in technology. They've had more immersion to it. They're more comfortable with digitization. But they're certainly more open to it. They're like, I don't know what this feckin' Bitcoin thing is, but you're on about pensions and that pension was a scam.
That's the exact quote from
a gentleman I met too long ago. I'd like to get your take on that, on how you think of the pension, or am I being too hard on the pension? Because I know you get the tax incentive, okay, but I'm willing to give up the tax incentive to manage my own money, because the tax incentive, I think, is a trick. What people don't consider is the fees. The fees destroy the compounded growth of that thing. Even though they're only little, it's only 0.1%. That destroys it over 13, 40 years. Whereas if you take the tax hit there and then, you self-manage your own money, I think, I know my pension that I manage myself is outperforming had I just dumped the money into give to someone else to manage.
Yeah.
So what's your take on that?
Well, I've basically, my last job was essentially put up the fees that we have as a company. So I had to analyze what was the inflation over the last year, take the CPI data, and then I've just had to up the fees again for the second year in a row by 8%. So not only is it you're getting a commission. So you've got the brokers. The way it's structured is you have loads of brokers around the country, and those brokers have different options. They have different insurance companies that they can choose from for pensions. So they might have Standard Life, they might have Irish Life, they might have Zurich, Aviva, whatever. These different insurance companies. So then they have their clients, and then they choose for their clients which company they want to use. So they might use Standard Life. So most of our business comes through brokers. So you have a few different intermediaries, and all this makes me laugh. You have the broker themselves. They take a chunky fee. They take an initial commission, which can be like up to 30% of the first year, right? And then they take this thing called fund-based renewal commission, which is a small amount of the fund amount that goes back to the broker, and it's to incentivize the broker to make sure that they give their clients good advice. Because a lot of brokers might get the initial commission, invest the funds of their clients, and then not give a fuck about their money because they're not being incentivized to maintain the value of that fund itself, right? So you've got the initial commission, you've got the fund-based renewal commission, you've got a pension levy that was introduced in 2015 and 2014 in Ireland. You've got the fund itself is being structured over in Edinburgh, so either BlackRock or Vanguard or Airbnb, they're a fund structuring management company based in Edinburgh. All of these, they take a percentage, that might be 0.5%, then Standard Life take a percentage as well. So you're talking about all in all, 1-2% of the fund value per year plus extras. And you're dead right. Like, it might not sound like a lot, but like if we just do a simple calc and we do we do 10,000. Do you have your calculator there? We can do 10,000 over the course of 40 years. So just 10,000 times 1.02 to the power of 40. So that's over 40 years, 2%. Yeah, so that's over two, like 22 grand, essentially. So 12 grand extra that they're just taking away from you. Now, that's well over 40%. That's over double. So even working in this now, I understand the government, it's a good incentive.
Yeah.
For people to put away money to, okay, right, I'm putting money away for the PRSI, or I'm putting away, and the employer can contribute towards that. That's great. I agree with that. But it's the whole, it's what everyone is playing. Everybody's investing within this bubble, and this bubble in itself is corrupted at this stage. So I think people are looking through this lens, and what would be beneficial is taking off the lens and actually being like, okay, maybe I have actually other options. I have Bitcoin, and Bitcoin's introduced that. It's introduced that opt out.
And what you mentioned to me before was, if everyone, because it's just a done thing in Ireland, you know, most people don't manage their own money. They give it away to someone else to manage. Because it's just a done thing and everyone is doing this, the whole point of investing is you're trying to pick and find better scarcity. But if everyone is just dumping their money into the same thing, it's like, it can't be undervalued. It's got to be overvalued. It's got to be bubble waiting to burst. Like that's not what good investments are. When everyone is going one way, you're going, I need to have a look at what's over there, because that's where my asymmetry is, that's my opportunity, that's my yield. Not I'm running with the herd because they're all running with their money that direction to go and buy something. I need that too. You know, as smart investors, we're contrarian thinkers. We do the opposite of what the current consensus is, I suppose. You're trying to position yourself earlier, position yourself in things that are undervalued as opposed to overvalued.
Going back to what you said as well, is like who knows best what to do with their money? It's you. You know, and you get to that idea of value. And, you know, if we're all investing in the same thing, you're saying that we all value the same things the same. That's essentially what you're saying, because I'm putting my energy, the work that I've put in, work is pretty much energy. I'm putting that into something that means I value it, because when you put energy towards something, you value it. When you put energy into your family, into your friends, and making sure that they're okay, you value them as people. And the same we can say about money. And that's why I think our emphasis on giving money away to this man or woman who can manage your funds, I think it's bad twofold, because you're giving it to this big institution that really don't give a fuck about you, realist, like you're just a number. And it's gone away. You can't use that for your local business. You can't use that for your local town. You could be putting that money into a sports center in your town that could facilitate sports for your kids or something like that. You know, you look at, I go over to Spain quite a good bit. I grew up in Spain. And you look at the way they invest their money in locally in towns, and I do have to say they put a lot of emphasis on the parks, on the sports centres, on making sure that there's enough facilities for the elderly to be able to live. And I think that's better allocated money, but I just think that's because the local governments have a more of a say on where the funds go. So I find that we are centralising all the money. And the more it centralizes, the more they're making decisions what to do with your cash. And the less they know, the more centralized, the less information can get to that central point, I think.
And to me, then, that sounds like maybe a Ponzi scheme. But it does. It sounds like a Ponzi scheme that if we're all investing into the same thing, well, the only return that I'm going to get is I'm going to hope that well, this continues and new people invest into this same thing. So that when I'm going to get out of the thing, there's new people investing into that thing. So I can exit my capital when it's time for me to have my pension. And that's where my sort of worry would be, is like, well, most Ponzi schemes can collapse or do collapse or are destined to eventually collapse. And, what if you pay into this sure thing for 30 years? And then when you go to draw your money and you're too old to go kick up a fuss, your life's, you're past your best where you can get out there and start getting politicians in headlocks and stuff. There's no money for you, like, and you know, maybe that can't happen. Maybe people who understand it are just going to go, Dini, you don't know what you're talking about, that can't happen. But for me, I'm just like, I like to manage some of my own funds so that I'm not relying on someone else giving my money back in 10 or 20 or 30 years time, like, because the world changes so fast.
Exactly. It's like you have control. Whenever you send your Bitcoin to your wallet or to your ledger, there's this feeling of control that you have over your own funds. And it's something that you can't really replace. You don't feel like that when you're investing in a stock or in a bond. You don't feel like it's up to you. But when you have your own Bitcoin and you have it secured, you know, listen, I know I have this 0.1 Bitcoin. I know I have this 0.1 Bitcoin. And when I'm 65, I'm going to have 0.1 Bitcoin out of that 21 million Bitcoin. You know, and all you're betting is that we're going to be better able to make goods and services when you're 65 than when you are now. That's all, because it's that 21 million divided by everything, essentially. So you're betting on human ingenuity and our ability to develop over time, which I back. So classically, the way the fund managers would have done that is invest in the global equity fund, like the MSCI, you know, which is the Morgan Stanley Composite Index, and that invests in broadly across the world. But at the end of the day, you have risk there. You have counterparty risk. You have risk with the company themselves, Morgan Stanley. You have geopolitical risks. And at the end of the day, you're going through the dollar system, the United States system. So you're taking their risk on as well. With Bitcoin, it's like the inverse. It's if that collapses, Bitcoin is there as a safe haven. Classically, it was gold. But now that you have something that can be transported at the speed of light and it has limited amounts of it, I feel like it's going to take its place.
So do you think that, like, a Bitcoin accumulation strategy is going to be built in or should be built into pension allocations, either at a personal or institution level? We could do it personally, as you and I both do, and many others. But what about, you know, these institutional pensions? Will they get there? Or will they get there?
I really, really hope so. I really hope so. I have faith in humanity. And even though it's Bitcoin's anti-government, anti-state, at the end of the day, the people running the state are human beings as well. And I genuinely think that people have, deep down, everyone's good. Deep down, you know, we get distracted and we might have false information and whatnot. But I think once people are educated enough, once people see this, because once you see, you can't really unsee it. Once you see the benefits of Bitcoin, you think that there will be procedures made where you can tell your employer, right, can you match my benefit? Can you put that towards Bitcoin? And it buys it from an exchange and it goes directly into your ledger, into your cold wallet, and you can store that away. But as you said yourself, people hope that this Ponzi scheme keeps going. You know, people are too invested in it. So the government are incentivized to push towards investing in companies like Irish Life Zurich or Standard Life, because they're making taxes off them, quite good taxes, let me tell you at that. And this is the status quo. You know, they're in bed with the government. So it's hard to see in the short term how that would happen. I think that these are going to be inflated quite a lot. And when people start losing trust, they're going to have to start just printing a huge amount of money. So it might not be the collapse. It might be the collapse, but it might not be the collapse of just like bang. It might more be just a debasement of the currency at a fast rate. If you look at maybe Argentina or countries like this, you're going to get a glimpse of how that would affect society. It's kind of like a bleed over the years, and like a confusing one at that. At least with a big collapse, you can blame someone. But with inflation, it's like, who do I blame? The last president? Do I blame this president? Like,
Putin, it gets really COVID, you know, it's all nonsense to give you someone to be angry at. It started when we went onto a fiat money system, and this is just how they all work. One thing that you said that was interesting is that Bitcoin is anti-state. I don't really see it like that. Maybe I'm not thinking about it properly, but I see Bitcoin as being something that everyone needs. So an individual needs it, a company needs it, an institution needs it, a country needs it, a government needs it. You know, you can be anti-Bitcoin, but the only person that hurts is you, because you don't get rid of it, you just get rid of your benefit from it. You know, and I see it that the world is going to go through this as a game theory over the next 10, 20, whatever amount of years, that, you know, like an anti-state. China have a fairly strong state, and even they can't ban Bitcoin. So Europe having a hope. America, forget it. Those people are armed, like, do you know what I mean? If China can't get rid of Bitcoin, well, nobody can. And the world, I think those other governments are probably, if they have half a head, they're going, well, if China can't get rid of this thing, we're not going to have a hope. We might as well get behind it, because if we're anti-Bitcoin, we just push it underground. And, you know, drugs are underground, and they've a physical. They've got to physically come into a country, and it can still be done. Okay, but Bitcoin doesn't have a physicality. So it's going to be simple to have a black market with it, where you just, instead of collecting all the tax, you're just pushing it so that someone else is going to collect that money. So, I've spoke about that before, but that's my game theory on this, that, you know, we're going to see it play out. We're seeing El Salvador pick up the ball and go, we want this Bitcoin ball. You know, we see other countries drop the ball and go, no, we don't want it. But it doesn't stop the Bitcoin mining in their country. It doesn't stop the Bitcoin adoption in their country. In some cases, it just speeds it up. Like it basically advertises it. Government say, no, okay, what is this thing then?
You look at someone like Nigeria and all their attempts at trying to ban it and to disincentivize their people to use it. And then you look at the stats, and it's the leading country in the world in terms of P2P Bitcoin uses. So sometimes I feel like the more resistance, nearly the more it comes back at you, you know, the more attention people put towards it. So yeah, totally agree with you. There's nothing stopping Bitcoin, but it's about how can we structure the world around this base layer. That's what I think the next step is for us, is to be able to, okay, first of all, how do you structure your individual life, but then your local community, and then your town, and then your city, and then your country. And I think that's the definition of ground up and how Bitcoin works. It's like this big mesh of,
Have you listened to much of David McWilliams chatting about Bitcoin?
Big time. I'd love to have a little talk about this. I'd love to get him a chat. Like, we need to just sit him down and be like, David, because he's smart. Like,
no, but I don't think he can get it, you see, because he's from a different era, and his rationale is different than my rationale, and my rationale is different than my father's rationale, and my father's rationale is different than his father's. That just paradigm shifts on what makes absolute critical thinking sense to that man doesn't make critical sense to me. I see a different world. And that's why I think, like, he's been exposed to Bitcoin, I think, since it was under a tenner, a Bitcoin. Like, Max Keiser was. So it's not that he hasn't had the information. It's just that his world, it doesn't make sense. And the other thing I think is that he wants the money. Yeah, he wants to be right. Okay. And sometimes, one thing I'm really good at is looking like a feckin' idiot. I'm happy to be wrong. I love being the worst athlete in the pack because I'm training the hardest. I love being the thickest person in the room because I'm getting the most value. I love trying new hobbies and sports where I look silly and I fall over all the time. But I don't care. I don't mind being wrong. And I think that's really important. Okay, but what I get is, and this is just my interpretation, so it mightn't be truth, But my interpretation is perhaps it's that he's been down the rabbit hole that this thing is a Ponzi scheme. There's nothing here. And he's denied it for that many, you know, almost a decade. You know, it, when you're that deep in the hole, you might as well keep digging to the grave. You know, you're in too far to pivot.
It's like he's holding on to this, his ego or something, that, you know, this is his identity now. He's against crypto.
Yeah, and it's just his framework of the world that he cannot see that you know, this is a different world than 10 years ago, and certainly than 20 years ago. Like, the world has changed so much, okay? And education now is abundant, but it's only really in the last 5 years that YouTube, okay, and all these social platforms have took off with podcasting. Traditionally, it was, you know, there was just content, but podcasting has really taken off. And now we have with TikTok short form. So education is now getting out there. Your average kid, like, I've got buddies who are in their 20s and they're sending me little Snapchats or stuff of, you know, someone talking about money and how they're getting screwed. Like, when I was 20, I never understood money. It took me, you know, until I was 30 till I sort of started to understand how to make money. And it took me to closer to my 40s before I actually understood how money worked. But now you've got kids getting there 20 years earlier and going, nah, I don't like this system that's just moving my money. I can't afford a house. And I now know why. My parents didn't know why. They just told me money just, price things just goes up. We don't know why. It's just inflation. It always happens. But now there's teenagers educating other teenagers about why this happens, how this happens. And guess what? We've got this fixed money supply. This is the solution. And I know everyone who's in the Ponzi of fiat currency can't get it. They're not incentivized to get it. And they won't get it. And one little side thing on this is, for me being in healthcare, I found that in the health industry, when I talk to mainstream doctors, and they'd be so closed-minded to something like fasting, even though there's so much research behind it, they just wouldn't have done any continuous education, okay? Or when I mentioned about the ketogenic diet and all the cancer research that's going into that, and it's making noise that it needs to be explored, and they'd be just still pulling out a food pyramid and going, now this is how you eat, 9 portions of carbohydrates a day. And I'm going like, how can this intelligent man earning so much money working in healthcare be so ignorant to change, in that you're teaching a world of the 70s and 80s. We've moved on. We've got other things. And then I'm like, well, if it happened there, perhaps it's happening in finance as well, that these people just have their heads, either they're so busy trying to keep whatever they have going, living above their means, or their heads are so far up their ass that they haven't bothered to continuously educate themselves in how the world has changed. Like, where, you know, and I don't know. I'm just waffling here, but...
No, you're dead. You're dead right there, Dinny. You're dead right. I think it's the combination of ignorance, of not wanting to look wrong, to look stupid. I think you're bang on there. These guys have built all these assumptions. I feel like when you're young, you're much more malleable. Your brain is much more malleable. The assumptions that you've made can be like debunked pretty easily. Whereas as you grow older, you start to form your own identity, your own view of the world and what it means. So when one of these building blocks, and people are saying that the block down here is actually incorrect, there's a lot of uncovering for you to do, and sometimes it's more effort than you think is worth, you know, as someone. And maybe that's what David's thinking. Maybe he's like, this has worked for me fine, you know, I'm respected all over Ireland, people listen to me consistently, I worked for the Central Bank of Ireland, you know, I have a booming podcast, I know what I'm talking about. Just because these nobodies, or maybe he doesn't think like this, I mean, cynical, but he might say, let's, you know, they're just deluded, and they want that. So, you know, you can understand where he's coming from big time, but I think it would do him well if he just sat down with a few Bitcoiners, because there's a few lads out there in Ireland who are well versed and who would be able to.
Big time, man. He sat down with Saylor. If you sit down with Saylor, really? And you don't get anywhere. Yeah, he did a podcast with Michael Saylor, and then at the end of it, when Michael Saylor was off it, he sort of gave his synopsis of it and disregarded everything, as you know, and it was like Michael had no chance to come back and argue. It was just how it finished. And to me, it's just like, it doesn't make sense. But I think I don't know. I'm just like, yeah. I jokingly say, like, he's going to have a problem when he's in his old pensioner's home and a load of disgruntled Irish people are going to come in and go, like, you kept us out of that thing for the last 30 years, and it's still the highest performing asset. And it was that Dini lad's been on here since 2020 telling people that this is the highest performing asset of the last 10 years. You should probably own a little bit of it. Why were you so ignorant?
Yeah. Well, at the end of the day, we can just focus on what we're doing. You know, I think that's the main thing, and try and build what we can from what we know. You know,
yeah, and there's like, disregard the it's a financial asset, it's going to make you rich. I think that's where he sees the problem is. He sees that people are just betting, they're gambling. It's the same as gambling on horses. He's not differentiating between Bitcoin and crypto, which needs to be differentiated, because Bitcoin was, you know, fairly released to the world. Nobody got a pre-mine. Anyone who owns Bitcoin either bought it or worked for it or burnt electricity to mine it. Unlike, you know, all the other, not all of them, but the majority of the other tokens which were created and pre-mines and stuff like that. So you have to differentiate between Bitcoin and crypto. So I think maybe he's just thinks people, and because in crypto, I'm exposed to that every week. People email me, call me, message me that they've been involved in some scam and they've given away their money on some get-rich-quick Ponzi because they've seen an ad with, you know, some celebrity on it, but the celebrity didn't even know that it was just a scam, basically, and they went and invested into something. You know, so he probably is seeing people getting hurt by this asset, but aside from the financial aspect of it, what about the human aspect? What about the fact, the remittance problem that it's solving? You know, what about the fact that, you know, just to use El Salvador, of all the good that's happened there, you know, all the wealth that's being created there, pulling people out of poverty. You know, like, you can say Bitcoin's bullshit, but like, try explain that to someone who has no access to the privileges that me and you enjoy just by the lottery birth of being born into the Western world, where we take all this stuff for granted. If you're somewhere and you've no ability to protect or store wealth or even have access to a money that's not being debased or turned off by an authoritarian government or something like that, like, Bitcoin to you is like, it's a life force for your family, for your village, for your way of life. It's a solution. So
I like the way you said that.
Yeah, and that's why I think even if you hate Bitcoin as a financial asset, you have to see that as a humanitarian aid. Like, there's something here that needs to be explored.
It's hard to relate, I'd say, for someone like David or for someone who's in the Western country to be able to feel what maybe a sub-Saharan African individual feels, not being able to access basic necessities. And not being able to partake in this financial world, you know, it's so beyond, because it's so easy for us. Like, I can set up a bank account in literally 2 seconds. Like, I did the other day, N26, downloaded it, and I was able to access funds from loads of different countries around the world. It works, you know, and that's within the financial system that we have at the moment. So I can understand why people are like, well, sure, what's wrong with the current system right now? I can use my Revolut. I can pay for things quite easily. I can receive money, and that's no problem. But we don't see what Argentina, how Argentina suffers, how Sri Lanka suffers, how the African countries suffer, and we don't see what's going on behind the hood either. But I think we will. I think it's only a matter of time. But the sooner we get the message across, the better for everyone. That's the bottom line.
How are you? How are you surviving the bear market? I'll give you what I'm taking.
Yeah,
I've been enjoying it. I've been accumulating. Okay, the little pump we had last week, I think Bitcoin went up nearly 30%.
I hate that.
And I remember in the
book, get nervous.
Yeah, you can't sleep when it's pumping like that. Like, and I was like, oh, here, I'm not ready for this. I need another year of relaxation before the bull. Because I remember the bull market. You're refreshing your phone and all the stuff, and you're just seeing, you know, you're.
But then you start asking questions. Is like, oh, like, do I want to buy into something that's being levered against massively? You know, when it went up to like 50, 60k, you're like, you start not wanting to allocate money towards Bitcoin as much. You don't, because, you know, it's you know, a lot of dollars have been borrowed to buy Bitcoin. So
Yeah, well,
it's
my strategy is always the same. It's just an accumulation, a dollar cost average. I think that's the most sensible strategy rather than trying to pick in time. But obviously, if I get more Bitcoin from my euro, I'm happy in the short term, and in the long term, I think my Bitcoin's going to be worth more euro.
Yeah. Well, how am I handling it? I'm the exact same, really. I'm the lower it goes, the better for me. Like if it went down to 10K, I'd be absolutely delighted, and I would. I think the main metrics you should be looking at are the hash rate and the amount of nodes that are being run across the world, and then the amount of transactions, real transactions, not people trading P2P. Like, I don't know if you've used any of the Lightning applications like RoboSats or through Telegram. They're absolutely brilliant. You can get non-KYC Bitcoin for like 3% pretty easily when you can sell it off. And it's really intuitive, super easy, functional, and it works, you know. And I've got people asking me for Bitcoin over in different countries in South America who are paying their employees, and I'm happy to sell them Bitcoin for a low enough commission. But it's being used, you know, and it's being used for very practical use cases. So, you know, like, let it be. And in terms of investing, well, I'm doing a dollar cost averaging myself. I sell Bitcoin as well. I've got an ATM in Alicante, so I always have to have a reserve. So it's kind of easier for me because I need it for business in general. So I buy as much as I can. And if I'm using euros, well, for rent or for food or whatever, then I have it in euros. But I don't keep too much in our fiat, unfortunately, for the bankers.
Oh, they won't miss it. Don't worry, they have enough.
Yeah.
It might change over the next 10, 20, 30 years, though. I, you know, my thesis is that they're going to have to embrace Bitcoin. You know, they're going to have to, because in America, it's already, I think, is it 20 or 30% of the population has some sort of exposure to it. Like, come on, it's huge. Yeah. I know in Ireland, we're a little bit behind. How do you think we are in Ireland? I always think we're behind America by whatever, maybe 5 full years, maybe a year more. But certainly we're nowhere near 20 to 30% of the population owning crypto assets. Because when I go to a party, you know, there might be one person there who wants to talk about Bitcoin, but the other rest of the party hasn't got a clue, thinks it's just magic internet money and, you know, no interest in it. What do you think about Ireland and our adoption or our openness to understand this technology?
That's interesting question. Generally, I think Ireland is quite an educated population. I don't mean to generalize too much, but everyone is pushed to kind of go to college after they finish their leave and blah, blah, blah. Not that that is a gauge for education at all. You know, my father left school when he was 14, and he's one of the most intuitively smart men I can think of. But anyways, I do think that they're quite educated. But I think that nearly works against the Irish, because they're university educated and they don't understand something, it might push them away from it. I don't know what you mean. I don't know if you get me. But I was in Ballsbridge the other day. I was having a coffee and there's these two men. They're in their 50s or 60s. White hair anyways. And one of the guys was talking about his stocks. And he was saying, I'm invested in them. And the other guy was like, and do you think that they're going to be good? And your man was like, yeah, they're solid businesses. And then I started talking to them. I said, I don't mean to interrupt, lads, but do you think valuations are going to maintain themselves the way they are at the moment, considering the interest rate environment? And the guys started chatting, and we ended up chatting about what would be smart to allocate towards. I didn't mention anything about Bitcoin. And then your man said, that thing in my phone is going up. And I was like, what? And he's like, crypto or whatever, Bitcoin. And he's like, yeah. So your man had invested into Bitcoin through Revolut, just as a bit of a game. And he was just waiting till it went up to 20K so he could sell again. So it was a game for them. But you could see they were interested in the guy to my left, who was more involved in stocks. He was more curious about it. And he did mention how a lot of high-end investors bash Bitcoin. You know, a lot of Charlie Munger type investors would go against it. But he was curious, and he said he'd really appreciate if there was a crash course of Bitcoin, something like what you do, Denny.
Something yeah, I'm teaching like a workshop after this podcast. Bitcoin basic okay, free okay, workshop. Right. Yeah. he might be on it.
But more of that, I think what you're doing is absolutely fantastic. And I think it's what the country needs. So I think it's such a burgeoning technology. It's hard not to be curious about it. As long as you let the person save face. I think that's the main thing. You need to let people kind of find it themselves. You're not going to make someone do something they don't want to do. That's the bottom line. So yeah, I think we need to talk in between the Bitcoiners ourselves more and organize ourselves as a group within Ireland. I think that's very important. I think regular discussions on a weekly basis, spaces that are happening on Twitter, I think they're quite powerful. But I think even something like a Bitcoin conference within Ireland with an Irish twist would really go down well nationally and maybe internationally. Everybody kind of likes the Irish in general.
No, that's something that I've been working on for the last little while with a partner of mine. We organized one last year. It was Ireland's biggest one, and we're hoping to try and get something else going. So as soon as we have more info, I'll bring it to you, and perhaps you
happy to attend anyways, definitely, big time. But yeah, I think we're getting there bit by bit, and the more connections we make, the better, bottom line.
Deadly. Is there anything else you'd like to cover before we finish up, Charlie?
I just want to say to you, Dinny, well, to people listening, just that if you've just been introduced to Bitcoin and you find it interesting, keep going, stay curious. It might seem difficult to understand, but the more you dig in deeper, the more it gives back to you. And the more you know you don't know as well. I think that's a big thing. And it opens up a huge realm of knowledge. And you get to know yourself as well through Bitcoin. You really get to know yourself. And I think that's the ultimate aim. But no, Denny, thanks a million for this chat. It was really good. I learned a lot myself now, I have to say.
It's been fun. Do you want to sound off your Twitter handle there in case anyone wants to jump on and connect with you and pick your brains over Anton?
Yeah. So the natural investor, you'd be able to find me on Instagram as well. I just send out videos trying to describe economic principles. I try to lay down investment principles to make investments come naturally to the audience. So the natural investor, and on Twitter, it's at the natural invest one. Maybe you can put it down on the
notes.
The notes, yeah.
Can indeed. I'm going to have to search for you on Instagram. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're connected on Instagram. And you'll probably be hounded by fake Dinnies trying to follow you every day. Okay, because I have an unlimited army of imposters that no matter how many I block, new pop, more come. Charlie, we'll have to do this again in the future, man. Thanks for coming on. It's a great conversation.
Same as. Good luck in your workshop later on, and chat soon.
Thanks, man.
Best of luck. See you.